So welcome, everybody. Really appreciate everybody joining tonight. And this is the second of four webinars being held on this topic, as you may know. May have some new folks as well as some others as well. Melissa put in the chat for those on the computer using this tool, Zoom. You can reach out to her if there's any technical questions or issues that you need to raise. In just a minute, we'll explain about how folks on the phone can participate actively as well. What I first want to do is welcome Selena Cunningham, who is Deputy Director of the Governor's Energy Office, to welcome us. And I'm Patrick Field, facilitator with the Consensus Building Institute. So Selena, over to you.
Great, thanks, Pat. It's great to be here tonight. We're really happy that you are participating in this important initial discussion. For those of you who joined the webinar yesterday, we appreciate you continuing to be engaged. You will hear a very similar presentation from what you just heard, but happy to engage in Q&A too with everyone. So we also want to thank the Maine Fishermen's Forum for partnering with us to help promote this event. We are here tonight to talk to you about the state's plans to apply for a lease in federal waters to site a floating offshore wind test project, or as you'll hear it called tonight, a research array. The state sees an opportunity for offshore wind in Maine. We also recognize that there are genuine concerns with how this new industry will impact people's livelihoods in the fishing industry, which has been part of Maine's culture and traditions for generations. The state is proposing an offshore wind research array for a number of reasons that we'll discuss in a few minutes. One of the most important critical takeaways from this discussion is that there are important decisions about the project that we want direct input from the fishing industry and other stakeholders before making final decisions. This webinar is the beginning of the process, and we hope many of you will continue to work with us over the coming months. I also want to acknowledge that in response to the announcement of the research array, we have heard both strong support and enthusiasm from some, while others have expressed concern and wanted more dialogue in advance of this step. Tonight, we will share more information about what we are doing and why, hear comments and questions, and discuss how you can influence the process and the project. The overall goal of the research array is to take a prudent approach to advancing offshore wind while working to answer important questions about how most effectively and responsibly to bring offshore wind into our marine environment and with our existing users. We think that there are tangible, proactive actions that the state can take to shape and inform not only this project, but the future of offshore wind development in the Gulf of Maine. We want to engage with you to understand best how to work with you on this effort, to understand more about the fishing activities happening in the areas under consideration, and hear your ideas for needed research to inform future commercial development. This information will help us minimize impacts when siting the project, improve the usefulness of the research, and in the long term, it is our hope that we will improve our expectations and understanding for how commercial development, siting, and operations should happen down the road. I understand some may feel this is a tall ask, especially for people who may not be supportive of offshore wind. But the reason why we are here tonight is because there is information, ideas, and questions that you have that will improve how the state moves forward with offshore wind. A lot of our time will be tonight is for discussion and questions. We also hope that this is the second of several, first or second, depending on which night it is for you, conversations we can have about this project. I'll turn it back to you, Pat.
Great, Selena. Great. We just want to go through a bit of the agenda and a few kind of approach, and then we'll dive in. So again, really about a half hour or so is really dedicated to sharing with you information about this project and approach from the state. And really the rest of the time is really turned over to all of you for comments and questions. So we'll talk about why Maine is pursuing the array, some basic components of this project or effort, and then the way to be involved going forward after these webinars to kick things off. And then again, we'll go to comments and questions, and we will wrap up by 7:30 to be cognizant of people's time. So there's a few things we want to cover. Most of you are probably well-equipped with Zoom and tired of it. Nonetheless, just a few things. If people could mute themselves if they're not talking, it just manages sound quality for everybody, which we most appreciate. You can mute and unmute yourself. We will only over-mute you if we're trying to manage sound quality. If you're on the phone, you can hit *6 to unmute yourself and *6 to go back on mute. And on your phone, I think you often come in muted, so you may need to do that. If you want to raise your hand, there's a participant list, which is at the bottom of your screen. You can see participants. You click on that, a little box pops up. And in that is the ability for you to raise your hand to make a question or comment when we get to that section. So do use that if you can. It's just easier for me to track questions if they're over there. Also, if you click on the little chat box at the bottom of your kind of a guide for Zoom, a chat box will open, and you can also put a question or comment in the chat function as well. If you're on the phone, you actually can raise your hand. All you have to do is hit *9. And that actually will show up just as a hand raise, just like anybody else. And I'll be able to call on you. If I don't have your name next to your number, I'll just call out your phone number and ask you to identify your name and affiliation. And that should generally work well. Sometimes people have not been able to manage the participant list raise hand. If that's the case, you can raise your hand on screen. I may not see it, but we have some staff watching that. So we'll try to catch you if I miss you otherwise. Or you can just note in chat, hey, I have a comment, and I'll try to get in there. In terms of the process tonight, kind of rules of the sea, we understand there'll be both questions and comments, and both are welcome and encouraged. We do ask that people share the floor. So you may have a comment, a question, just be concise so that you can speak and others can speak and raise their issues and concerns and ideas as well. We ask people to be direct, respectful, raise the issues you want to. We're not looking for agreement, but we do ask that people be civil. And I think as noted, this is really the start of a conversation, as Selena said, and in the middle of this presentation, and then also at the end again, we'll talk about what that might look like going forward. So thank you all for joining. I'm gonna turn this back to Selena and her team to cover kind of the information piece before we go to questions and comments.
Great. So top of mind is likely why offshore wind, and why are we proposing a research array now? The legislature, with bipartisan support signed by the governor, set policies and timelines to address climate change and increase renewable energy. I won't go through the specifics of those policies. They're available on our website if you want more information. But what it does mean is that our energy system is changing and will undergo a substantial transition over the coming decades. This includes decreasing fossil fuel use, particularly in our homes and transportation, which will lead to increased electricity demands and the need for more clean energy. Meeting our clean energy needs will require a balanced approach, which will include onshore wind, solar, offshore wind, among other energy sources. Offshore wind is a part of our long-term energy vision for why Maine, as well as most of New England and other coastal states, as well as in Maine and New England and other coastal states. Although it is a crucial part of our energy future, we realize that offshore wind will raise new concerns about wildlife, ecosystems, habitat, and existing uses, all things that people care about. We need to pursue this growing industry prudently and cautiously. We recognize that people will want to debate why we are doing this. The fact is that we do see value and opportunity for Maine in offshore wind. But we have a lot to learn about how the offshore wind industry can grow in a way that considers all interests. For additional context for why we are having this conversation now about offshore wind, it's worth briefly looking at the state of the offshore wind market in the US. While there are less than 50 megawatts installed at this point, the industry is growing quickly. Today, there are 15 federal leases issued. States along the East Coast have set offshore wind targets exceeding 28,000 megawatts. States are working to increase their procurements of offshore wind. To date, nearly 10,000 megawatts are under contract, which brings both energy and related economic activity. In addition to states, there is interest from a broad number of stakeholders. When you look at the Gulf of Maine and its vast wind resources, the regional nature of the Gulf, and the likely interest in additional commercial leases from the federal government, there is a strong indication that commercial scale offshore wind is coming to the Gulf of Maine. And we want to be ready. As we think about what it means for our state, we see the best path forward is a deliberate approach to offshore wind that considers Maine's interests in order to ensure long-term success of any development in the Gulf of Maine. We also want to be in the driver's seat and chart a path that will be most beneficial for our state and our citizens, and be proactive in order to best be prepared for this development. So Maine's approach to offshore wind is that the state sees first and foremost that there are important questions that we need to be answered before any commercial projects are built off of our coast. We want to advance floating technology and support local innovation. We want to know what it means to have offshore floating platforms in waters used by our existing industries and what impacts they may have on our natural resources. The federal government, through the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, or BOEM, is ultimately responsible for the leasing of offshore wind in federal waters, which is beyond the 3-mile line from the coast, 3 miles from the coast. That includes both this project as well as commercial scale development. there is a regional, state, federal task force that is focused primarily on commercial leasing and development. While the approval of their research array or the pace and scope of activity, commercial activity, are federal decisions that we do not control, we do believe and will advocate for what we see as the prudent next step for offshore wind in Maine, which is the research array. We value regional coordination and having a regional approach, and we will continue to work with our neighboring states on both the research array as well as commercial leasing. There are steps that we can take now, including increasing data and planning efforts, that will put us in a better position when it does come time for federal commercial leasing or at project approval. The bottom line is, we see promise for offshore wind, and we know that there is a strong interest beyond our state for development in the Gulf of Maine. We see benefits in pursuing a phased approach to learn how to best protect the things that are important to us. First and foremost, we want to learn how to best integrate offshore wind into our existing marine environment. That includes understanding, avoiding, and minimizing impacts to fishing activity, habitat, wildlife, and the marine environment. We also want to advance the development of floating offshore wind technology. The Gulf of Maine, due to its water depths, will likely require floating platforms. There are no floating platforms in the US and limited experience worldwide. Floating technology is quite different from fixed bottom platforms that we see south of here, and that we have much more information about the construction, operations, and impacts. We also want to forge ahead with innovative floating technology that is homegrown and take other steps to cultivate and build an offshore wind industry that can serve the state and the region, whether it's through R&D, manufacturing, assembly, deployment, and operations. We see economic opportunities for offshore wind. And this research array, while relatively small, will set us on a path to begin building out a new economic sector. That said, we know there are concerns about displacement, particularly for the fishing industry. Our goal is to add jobs, not replace them. And lastly, it will put us on a path to more securely deliver clean, renewable energy to our state. A key component of this work is that affected stakeholders need to be part of the conversation early on. We see the path forward as one where we work together, and in particular with the fishing industry, to the extent that people are willing. We need fishing industry engagement to help inform the identification of this site and the research questions that we will study there. The bigger picture is that we are trying to inform future development of commercial scale projects so that they can be done as well as possible and can avoid repeating some of the problems and challenges that have occurred with fixed bottom development in other places. We've had initial conversations with some industry members, but we need to talk to a lot more starting tonight. It is our intention to have public input throughout the planning, permitting, and operations of this project beyond the public comment periods through the formal permitting process. So who is involved in this project? The Governor's Energy Office, or GEO, is the lead for the state on the project. I'm the Deputy Director, and Dan Burgess, the GEO Director, is on the call tonight as well. GEO is tasked with overseeing the research array, including the stakeholder process, application, overseeing the research plan development, and in the long term, continuing to oversee the project. GEO is consulting with the Department of Marine Resources on data analysis and tools for siting. DMR is also going to work with GEO throughout the project on ways to avoid or minimize impacts to the fishing industry as they better understand the fishing industry's work and operations. GEO is currently coordinating with other state agencies, federal agencies, and working with state agencies in the region. CBI, the Consensus Building Institute, along with Laura Singer, are on board as consultants to assist with stakeholder engagement for this application effort. GEO is coordinating with the University of Maine on this project and intends to utilize their floating technology. Lastly, the state is partnering with New England Aquaventus, a joint partnership between two offshore wind companies, RWE Renewables and Diamond Offshore Wind, to develop the project. They are providing technical expertise in support of the application process, but the decisions in the application, including where the array will be located, are state decisions. Chris Wisseman from New England Aquaventus is on the call tonight and will help answer some of the questions. So what are we talking about here? The state is applying for a federal lease for a research array to further test a multi-turbine project to learn about the questions, some of the questions I went through. It will be a 12 turbines or fewer, and the specific size of the turbines will not be decided at this phase of the project planning. The project will cover 16 miles or less. This is a little bit of a tough map, but the line there is a 20 mile line, a 20 mile line there. So the location of the research array is absolutely not predetermined outside of a very general area. And we need your input about where to locate the research array in order to avoid or minimize impacts. The state has worked to identify some basic parameters that we'll go through in a little bit. And these, along with some economic and technical feasibility components, will be considered when we're working through the siting of this project. Beyond that, it's open for input. This slide is difficult to read at this scale, but where we are in the application process. So this is the first public meetings or the webinars that we're having now. And then the state is planning to submit an application in late winter or early spring. The application will identify a specific site for the project, outline broad categories for the research we will undertake. After the application is submitted, it'll go through a federal review process that includes additional opportunity for comment. If the lease is issued, then detailed site assessment work will take place, and this will be followed by further planning with stakeholders over a multi-year timeframe, which will include additional federal and state permitting before the project is constructed. And a preliminary projection is in about 5 years we could see construction, although there are a lot of steps between now and then, so it is a preliminary estimate. There are a number of aspects of this project that differentiate it from a commercial scale project, and that is the size of the project and that it will be designed and operated with a goal of gathering crucial information for future project operations. There are aspects of the project that are similar in that it will be connected to the mainland to supply clean energy into Maine. It will also have a lease for 20 or more years, which will allow for research throughout the duration of the project. As a first step in the application, we will put forward a research framework, which will outline general themes or categories. And for those on the phone, I'll go ahead and read some of the themes: environment and ecological interactions with fishing activity, navigation, technology research and demonstration, including mooring systems, workforce education and training, and other ideas that you may have. And we have developed some general questions and themes, details of what these mean, but we're certainly open to input about how to be more inclusive in the research that we should undertake in this project. And then just baseline pre-construction site assessment work that happens on this project will not be part of the research effort. We're talking about research that goes well beyond those standard type of site assessment work that happens already. Once the lease is issued for the project, the state will set up and lead a more formal research consortium that we want to include stakeholder involvement in that process. We will seek your input about the research and the questions you have, and we'll seek to collaboratively work with others to maximize research opportunities, share data and results. And there are a number of questions out there that we want to build on. We also have been discussing how to work with regional partners like the Responsible Offshore Development Alliance, or RODA, and their sister science organization, given their experience with research and data questions. So regarding location, I'll reiterate that we have not identified a site. The initial siting criteria I'll read through here. So it's 20 to 40 statute miles offshore, 150 feet of water or deeper, interconnecting in the southern half of Maine. The bottom type is gravel or mud, minimal or avoid or minimize known conflicts with fishing grounds, avoid highly trafficked areas and limit visibility from shore. And from here, what will be most helpful to know are areas to avoid as well as areas to consider. As we work to narrow down potential locations to consider for this project, We also hope that you will work with us to understand the specifics of your operations in those areas so we can avoid impacts to the extent possible. Without this information, the state's decision could be less informed. And what I think is equally important, we will miss an opportunity to set precedent for the way that stakeholders in Maine are engaged on offshore wind decisions down the road, especially when those programs or decisions would be made by others, be it the federal government or future developers. I recognize that there is a lot of information to take in all at once. We want to continue this conversation with those that are interested. And now we'll hear from Meredith Mendelson, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Marine Resources, who will tell us a little bit more about next steps.
Thanks, Selena. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us tonight. It's nice to see a lot of familiar names and faces on the screen. So we know that you may feel like a lot of decisions have already been made around this project, just by the decision to go forward with it. But the reality is here that there really are many decisions still open for discussion before the application is submitted. And we really want to work with you to fully bake this idea rather than do it for you. Without your input, we know we'll be missing key pieces of information that would influence where this project makes the most sense and frankly, where should be off limits. We want to work with you to understand how to do this effectively, and we want to help provide the tools that you think it would be most helpful to have to do that. So we've started thinking a little bit about that, and we're planning to put some resources online next week that we hope will be helpful to you in providing input to us and also to just helping you think about where this project might go. So those things will include documents that summarize the siting process, a document that that reviews the siting criteria that Selena just described, as well as some initial thinking that we've had around the research framework work that we'll want your input on as well. We're also planning to put up a charting tool so that you can look at the areas that might be feasible based on those criteria. So that would include the 20 to 40 mile distance from shore band that Selena just mentioned, 150 feet of depth or deeper water, as well as kind of darkening out no-go exclusion areas from Department of Defense exclusion and the shipping lanes. We're also anticipating that going forward, we may use some surveys as tools to ask the fishing industry for more specific information about who's fishing out there, what their activity and operations in the area look like. That's a little further off. If you have other ideas for ways that we can provide tools or resources to help you engage in this process, we're all ears. So please don't hesitate to reach out to me or Selena directly on that. So moving on to the timeline again, while we're still fleshing out the full path from these webinars to the application submission, we are anticipating that the next step for this discussion will be a scoping forum in early January of next year, 2021, to advance that siting discussion and jointly outline a process to move forward. In that meeting, we will be reviewing siting criteria for the purpose of considering feasibility of the project in various locations. We want to go over the available data, identify data gaps, and also begin to identify areas either for further exploration or for elimination. And again, I just want to revisit the target deadline for submission of the application, because at that point, we will need to have identified the site and built the broad strokes of the research framework. And we're planning to submit that application in late winter or early spring. Between now and then, in addition to the scoping forum in January, we hope very much to have conversations with you throughout the winter, starting now and going through the winter to inform development of the application. Selena and I are both very much open to phone calls, one-on-one discussions, video conferencing, small group meetings online, whatever works for people. And hopefully the COVID indicators will get a little bit better in the near future and we can begin to hold small in-person socially distanced meetings. But for the moment, we're looking at remote platforms. While there's a lot of information provided tonight, there's also more information on particularly the GEO website to provide context for this discussion. And also I want to note that last year, the Fishermen's Forum held a full day session on the topic of offshore wind. Some of you attended. Many of the presentations that were given at that event are available on the forum's website, and that's an excellent resource as well. And at that point, I'm going to turn it over to Pat.
All right, great. And we will also project this at the end of the webinar today, just so people have contact information. So really now, thank you for the presentations. Again, now is really the time for questions and comments. What we are doing is folks are taking notes just so we capture the issues and concerns and ideas so that the state has them. And if people could just state their name and affiliation if they have one as they start their question or comments, just helpful for people to know who's speaking. So again, Zoom reminders, if you want to raise your hand in the participant list, that's the easiest way for me to call on you. You can also put a question or just call, you know, say I want to be called on in the chat function, and I'll kind of bounce between those places. And if you're on the phone, you can hit *9, and that will actually make you visible to me as well to be able to see if you have a comment. And then again, in case you just kind of physically raise your hand on your screen, we'll try to look for those. We may miss those, so the chat function is the best way to do that, or the raise hand if you can. Okay, with that, I think we're ready to go. Why don't we, Laura, go ahead and go off screen so we can see each other. And I'm going to start. Chris has a question. So Chris, I'm going to turn it over to you first. And Chris, no, you're on mute still. If you're on the phone, if you're on the phone, just hit *6 to get off mute there.
Can you hear me?
Yes, there, you got it. Beautiful.
So we're in questions. I just had a, you know, obviously, thank you all for having this. Sorry, I'm in a car. I probably look like I'm in a dungeon, but I just wanted to ask a question. Obviously being in the fisheries, I would say that when we get to this point, I think you've already addressed, it's already been addressed that we all wonder what's already been decided, despite the fact that a lease hasn't gone in. And I would also say that a lot of us assume that an experimental array is very likely to end up in some people's minds. I'm sure there's the hope to turn that into a full blown array. And I'm just going to tell you that no matter what anyone says to the fishing industry, that's how we're going to feel. And one thing I would flag is when I come on this, and am I correct that the decision has already been made that it's got to be 20 to 40 miles from shore? And since it's a question, I don't want to bleed into a comment because I already kind of started doing that. But, you know, that seems like a decision that should have been at least not brought up until after you consulted with the industry, because that's exactly the kind of thing I would think the industry should offer input on. And I'm not trying to be critical, but it's hard to not worry what's already been decided and what some are hoping for when the first thing we're told is we've already narrowed it down to 20 to 40 miles from land and something about a southern main interconnect, which kind of sounds like we've narrowed an area down. And so I would just warn, you know, that's the way we're going to feel about this. And I just would ask, am I correct that decision's already been made, or is that just kind of an example of the kind of decision that might be made? Am I reading into it too much? And thank you for letting me kind of comment a little more than I should have during questions.
Chris, thank you. I wonder if we could do this. I don't know whether, Laura, you could pull up that one slide that had the criteria on it. And then I think, Selena, if you want to speak or ask your team to speak kind of about what is decided and what's not, would be, I think, helpful for people.
Yeah, thank you, Chris, for the comments and your comments about the commercial piece as the larger project that is certainly not our plan, but I understand that the way people may feel. So it's good to hear the way that it's received. So the state has made a determination about the 20 to 40 mile band. We are looking at an area that is south of small, sorry if my kids are super loud, south of Small Point and between south of Small Point and south of the mouth of the Sheepscot River. And so in the 20 to 40 mile band, and the 20 mile determination was made for trying to limit some of the known fishing areas, although I know that fishing happened well beyond 20 miles addition. So I'm not saying that that's the full rationale. And the other is to limit some visibility as well. And then on the 40 mile line, Chris, I wonder if you can answer that specific question.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Selena. So yeah, on the, this is, I think what's contemplated is a small project, right? So 40 miles is actually really far offshore for a small project. For instance, like a lot of those small projects are built in the UK as a first phase, a little bit like this, and they were within 10 miles of shore. So I think the 40 is really the practical limit of what cables can can run that, you know, that distance without having to either put in second cables or offshore substations and all that sort of stuff. So it's really sort of a practical limit for this size project.
And so I'd say,
I was going to say that
distinction is specific for this smaller scale 12 turbine or less project. When we're talking about much larger commercial projects, for instance, and the projects south of here, commercial projects can be often 10 times the size that we're talking about now. So when you're talking about that type of size project, the specific outer bound would be quite different than this smaller project in terms of the cost of energy. And you're on mute still, Chris.
I was just going to say, if you don't mind, I was just going to say that, you know, to me, when I hear 20 to 40 miles between Small Point and the Sheepscot, well, first of all, that's a pretty narrow area already. I know this is a small project, but I'd also add that, if I don't have a chart in front of me, but that's roughly from Sagadahoc, which is a very important fishing ground, down to Platts, which is a critical fishing ground, all the way down over to, I would say, probably north or near Three Dory, towards Toothacres, and towards the Harris ground. I mean, I don't know of a fishier place on earth. If you were going to tell me to draw a rectangle, and I'm a tuna fisherman, a harpooner, and so we travel long distances all the time, that's one of the fishiest places, not only off of Maine, but anywhere in the world. I mean, I probably shouldn't even say that much on this, whoever who's listening, but it's like, that's the mother load of tuna, whales, and bait right there. And so, you know, I guess, you know, at this stage, I'm happy that you're engaging us. I would just say that the optics of, it sounds like it's a small area. You know, I don't want to say too much, but that's a very fishy area. And it might've been the first place other than, there's really no good places within 40 miles of land, you know, but I hope we'll be engaged in, not just engaged, I'm not implying anything, but, you know, I hope we're not just engaged to check that off a list. And again, it just worries me that we've already got a narrow box to start with. So I'm going to stop. Thank you for the opportunity to comment, and again, for reaching out to the industry.
Great. Thank you, Chris. I've got John Williamson next. John, just unmute yourself there and you'll be set to go. Still, there you go. Now,
can you hear me?
Yes, you're up. Yep. Good.
Yes, as some of you know, I served as fishery liaison for Ørsted on two of their projects in southern New England and Mid-Atlantic. One was the Bay State Wind Project, and the other was the New Jersey Ocean Wind Project. So for 3 years, I was serving as their liaison in the development of construction and operations plans for their applications for both those projects. And so it's a little bit of input, some of the frustrations and difficulties that we had in both those cases that I'd like to flag up front here. One is that there are actually two different environments that are affected and two different types of fishing effort that are impacted. There is the environment that is encompassed by the wind array, the wind farm itself. And then there's the environment that surrounds the cable laying. And the cable laying comes into shore so that, you know, the wind array is going to affect vessels that fish and fisheries that happen well offshore. But export cable is going to affect the inshore fisheries, and primarily that is the lobster fishery in southern New England, and I suspect it'll be the lobster fishery here in the Gulf of Maine. And the issue is that electromagnetic fields affect lobsters. And that the electromagnetic field is a component of this impact that is created by this high voltage cable. The most effective mitigation strategy for that is to make sure that the cable is buried at least 2 meters deep. Okay. And in order to bury it that deep, you've got to have it running through substrate where you can achieve that kind of burial depth reliably. One of the most effective things that I was able to do was to create a working group with lobster fishermen to do work with the cable siting engineers. And one of the frustrations we had to deal with was that BOEM requires a lot of investment in data accumulation about substrate, okay, up front. And that's an upfront cost that runs into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that when the cable is sited, it's usually sited fairly early in the game in developing the overall construction plan. And then the company goes and invests a lot of money in doing remote sensing of many different kinds. They're trying to understand the substrate down to depths of 100 or 200 feet in most of that. But they're also trying to understand whether they can bury the cable or not, and then create a plan around that. Where they can't bury the cable, they plan on doing rock mattressing. Rock mattressing creates another impact on the environment. It changes the environment. If there's a lot of rock mattressing, that's adding a lot of new hard substrate to the environment. One way or the other, the lobster fishermen actually were able to help reroute, in some cases, the cable laying around the most important lobster grounds. They phrased it as the A grounds for them. Okay, but that was that kind of opportunity was really foreclosed to a large extent because the company had already invested a great deal of money in surveying the route that they had chosen early in the game and so if the lobster industry had been working with the company to define that route, they would have probably have found a much better route for the fishing industry, for the lobster industry, that the company would have been happy to do. As you know, it's one option. I mean, it's no skin off their back to do it to do the route one way or another, as long as they're not adding a lot of extra miles. So that's one comment.
John, just the time. Can go ahead and make that other comment and try to be a little more brief.
I will. The other one is pretty succinct, Pat, and that is to say that frustration that the fishing industry has had with all these projects going in south of the Cape has been that there is no time to develop baseline data of impacts, okay? And there needs to be a plan that for putting data collection plan in the water as soon as possible to be able to get as many years of baseline data. I'll stop there as saying what baseline data needs to be accumulated. That plan is hard to come by because the builder and the fishing industry needs to agree what's important, okay, and what are you going to want to monitor for over the long term, okay, and then come up with a research plan for getting the baseline on those metrics, those chosen metrics, okay, and you want ideally 5 years of baseline data before construction. So those are two things that really need to be looked at right from day one. And I'll stop, Pat. I'm done.
John, thank you. Thanks, Array. And I think last night as well, people raised, there's really two siting challenges, the array itself, and then the transmission cable, as you just noted, and baseline data, absolutely a concern people need to address. So John, thank you. I've got Alan Tracy, Jerry Cushman,
and then Meredith, do you want to chime in there?
Meredith, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to just comment quickly. I think John's raising some points that are, I think, relevant to this conversation and important because I know we kind of are, you know, there's concern about this process and concern about the fact that the decision has been made to make this application. But what it does do is give us an opportunity to answer some of these questions proactively and to begin doing that work earlier in the timeline than is the case in a commercial project. And so I just want to point that out because I think some of the things that John is raising as concerns, we have a potential opportunity to avoid by taking this approach with a research array. And I just wanted to make that note.
Great, thank you. Just thanks, Meredith, sorry for interrupting. So I've got Alan Tracy, Jerry Cushman, Virginia Olson, and Jeff Smith, and then I've got a comment in the chat. So Alan Tracy, over to you.
Hey, thanks. Hopefully I'm coming through. I'm Alan Tracy, owner of Vessel Services in Portland. About 90% of our business is with the commercial fishing fleet of all the different fisheries. And there's a lot of questions, but I guess where I'd be interested in hearing more information about whether now's the time or whether there's other places to find this, they really think it's important to get the technology explained. I think even what John was just saying was a start in that direction. Obviously there's a cable, this being floating technology, which is unprecedented, obviously compared to what's going on down south in New England and points further south. How does it work? You know, or how are they tethered? And the reason all of that is so important, I think, on the early part of this is, I think that's going to inform a lot of people's questions. For instance, is the fishing industry going to be able to coexist in some way in the same physical space with the array? Or is it going to be, you know, in the test run, 16 mile box and everyone else stays out, or are there opportunities to somehow use the same space? For instance, I know the Block Island project has created great opportunities for the recreational fishing industry. So I think questions like that are really important at the outset here and to explain what we're dealing with and what we're talking about. So I'll just keep it at that. That, you know, again, maybe now's not the time, but for all of us to hear a lot more about. Thank you.
Alan, thank you.
Thanks, Alan, for those questions. So I do want to get to the technology piece, but first answer the question about the can you fish in the around the arrays? And I think that's one where we do not know the answer to that. And that is one of the questions we want to better understand about. I think there's one perspective the developer has about what is technically feasible. And then there's another about what, as a vessel operator, you feel like you are fishing, whether you feel like you feel comfortable doing that. And so that is one of the things that we want to look at. Laura, would you pull up the slide that has the kind of visual of the that one? Yeah. And Chris, can you kind of just go over some of the basic components of what floating technology is?
Yeah, sure thing. So, you know, for those folks that can see it on the screen, essentially what this is a side view of two different floating turbines. It's not really to scale in any sense, but what they are is essentially a hull structure that you see. I'm going to focus on the one on the left, right? And then it literally floats and holds everything up. It is operates like a vessel. And what you see are the lines down there that are mooring lines, generally speaking, would have three, could sometimes have four. Some of them have more mooring lines that are actually big. They're steel chain link. And as you can see, it hits the seabed pretty quickly, like not far, you know, 100, 200 feet from the hull, and in this picture, it's shown up to 300, 350 feet. It can vary depending on water depth. And then that extends all the way out to a drag anchor. So classic anchor that would be, dug into the sort of softer substrate. So what you have is you have some of those, that mooring line is in the water column. And then you have an electric cable that we are attempting design so that it goes more or less straight down and is only in the water column right under the hull. And so a lot of the things that you see here, even these dimensions, the mile between turbines, a lot of these things are flexible and yet to be designed. That's part of the collaboration that goes on here. And so, yeah, that's the general arrangement. Any questions on this?
I don't know, Alan, if you want to raise a question to this point right here, since you raised the issue.
Well, like I said, I think the specific question is, will this technology allow fishing activity to happen within the same space as wherever the turbines are? I just think that's that's going to become a relevant question. And again, it sounds like there's a lot to core into about the technology and where the cables are going and the spacing, but I'm just flagging that it seems like a relevant thing to spend some time on. Particularly, with the understanding that at some point this won't be a research project, but it will be a full commercial scale project, which will take up much more space.
Raise an important point that clearly understanding the technology and its implications and thinking about it in three dimensions is going to be really important as this conversation goes forward in the coming weeks and months. I'm going to turn to Jerry, then Virginia, then Jeff, then a comment in the chat. So Jerry.
So can you hear me all right?
Yep, sound great.
Okay. Well, this is great. We're on the second meeting, and I think by the end of these seminars, I might have a ballpoint place where you're going to put these, because we know you need mud and gravel. You're going to 20 miles and you're going to be in 25 fathoms. So we are narrowing it down to where you're going to put this. And so that's good to know. My question is, the second thing I wanted to make on the last point was the marker buoys should be moved to the end of the mooring line if you are planning on having any kind of fishing between these turbines. It will not work. If you get a trawl snarled up in the mooring line at all, you're asking the fisherman to put himself into danger. So where you have your marker buoys is really not accurate to have in any kind of fishing in between them. That one's for Chris. And my question is going to be, there's a lot of rumors that we also have another 100 turbine potential coming down the road down east. And I don't know if you can talk about that right now. And I guess the main question I have is the research coming first, or is the 100 turbines down east coming first? Are we doing the research first, or is that coming first?
Thanks, Jerry. On the Down East project that you mentioned, the state is aware of a proposal that is out there for a nearshore project along swaths of our coast. Nothing has been submitted to the state. We have heard concerns, and we have concerns ourselves about some of the concerns about this project. So I would definitely hear you on that. And so right now, we are focusing on in the tangible project before us is this research array that we are putting forward. So that's the information I have on the Down East project, and that is out there, but we have not received a submission of any plan for that.
And Jerry, I would just add, just to be 100% clear, that is not a state proposal. This project, the research array, is the state proposal.
All right.
Yes, but I just want to just say the state's got to be aware of it because it's within state waters. Am I correct with that?
We are aware of the proposal. Yes.
But we don't know which one may come first.
There has been no project submitted for the state for a nearshore project. The one that we are working on is the research array. We have concerns with the ideas that we've heard about related to this other proposal for nearshore project. That's not the direction that we're interested in going right now, but the project before us that we're looking at is the research array.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry. I've got Virginia Olson had her hand up. I want to give her a chance to speak if she wishes to. Virginia?
Yes, I just wanted to comment. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. We hear you.
Sorry. I just wanted to comment again on John Williamson. He had spoken about the cables and the effect they had on lobster and the ability to map out a honey spot for fishing. But how would that impact their traveling pattern or their migration pattern and what that would mean to fishing?
How does the cable impact?
Correct. If we're going to lay cables, would it be one cable? Would it be multiple cables? And how would that impact how the lobsters travel?
Jenny, you're raising a question that my understanding is it would be one cable from the array to the interconnection point. But I'll let Chris answer that part. I guess on the EMF, on the electromagnetic field questions that John raised, those are exactly the kinds of concerns and questions that DMR is interested in learning about as well, and research that we would want to do. And that's the kind of piece of information and suggestion that we want to hear more of from the industry. What are the things that you all are most concerned about? And how should we prioritize our research around this array to answer some of those questions? And again, the goal is let's answer some of these questions with 12 turbines instead of a commercial scale project of many more.
So if we had some information with a research proposal like this, and we got back negative information that this was going to harm our industry, how would that affect the proposals that were coming commercially in federal waters moving forward?
Well, I think that more broadly, we would hope that this information would help us consider some of the siting decisions, as well as the project layout and configuration and the location and path for the transmission cable, as well as I'll let Chris talk about the specifics, but as well as things like the depth in which it's buried and other ways that if we learn specific information, how can we mitigate that when looking at a larger scale? Chris, is there anything else on the cable specifically, or Meredith?
Yeah, well, I would say Virginia, to your point of like discovering things, right? So there's the core is always to avoid the impact, right? So an example might be that that you bury the cables differently, you bury them deeper so that there isn't any impediment to lobster migration. So that's the sort of things that could be discovered in this research project that then get imposed on larger future scale projects. Learn from this.
So we've read about the blades possibly heating the surface temperature of the water. And we have concerns about, the Gulf of Maine being the fastest body of water, warming body of water. So what sort of things like that, if we recorded that this indeed was warming our waters, what would we do with that information?
I'm not familiar with that specific issue of the warming of the water, and we will look into that to make sure that we have the latest scientific data. But I think that the truth is that there are some unknowns about this technology. Well, fixed bottom platforms have been out there for a while, but we'll learn more about what it means to have floating platforms and wind turbines in the Gulf of Maine and what impacts those will have. And so that's the kind of information that we want to learn, and how, from a technology standpoint, if there are ways to minimize those impacts.
So I guess my question would be better answered if we found out that this was going to be detrimental to the fishing industry in Maine, and it was not in the best interest. How would this project benefit us in that scenario?
I can take a stab at that. I mean, I think one of the things is that, I mean, isn't it always better to have information to be
Absolutely.
Able to better articulate, what our concerns are? I think, in a project that is submitted by a developer, commercial scale, we don't have a lot of control in the decision-making in federal waters. So our comments are more powerful when we have data to back them up. And I think the key to that is, doing some of this work up front so we can answer those questions and point to that work and say, look, there is a meaningful impact to an incredibly important fishery in our state that drives, an incredible amount of economic activity on our coastline. And that just is a more powerful statement than saying, we don't know, but we're worried.
I agree. And I agree with having some sort of science behind us and being able to do that. And at the same time, I just want to know that my state is also going to support our industry when we need that support too. So I thank you for that.
Thank you, Virginia. Really appreciate it. Jeff, you next, Jeff Smith. I'm going to go to a comment in the chat. Then I'm going to go to Patrice, Daniel, and Troy. So Jeff, over to you.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sound great.
Yep.
Okay, thanks. Good evening, everyone. My name is Jeff Smith. I work with the Nature Conservancy here in Maine. I'm also a member of the board of the Maine Coast Community Groundfish Sector. And the question I had was regarding the timing of the project. I think both Selena and Meredith mentioned that the hope was to submit the application by late winter or early spring. And to me, that sounds like a pretty aggressive timeline for getting meaningful public comment, even in normal times. And I'd say, given the challenges posed by the COVID pandemic, that makes it even more difficult. And I guess I'd just say, as a guy who works for a conservation organization who's worked closely with commercial fishermen for over 15 years now, I've learned firsthand the importance of taking the time, trying to meet with fishermen in small groups or one-on-one, or and you know, preferably on their turf rather than your own. But I understand that there's challenges right now that we're facing trying to deal with that, and I appreciate Meredith talking about trying to get those one-on-one meetings if we can, and the pandemic allows. But I guess my question is, given the importance of this siting decision that a lot of people have focused on, and the challenges posed by the pandemic, I'm curious, first, if you could, Selena or Meredith might be able to share a little bit about what is driving the timeline for getting the application in by late winter or early spring. And also just, you know, if you feel like you've given yourself enough time to get some meaningful public input from fishermen and frankly from others on a pretty important siting decision that's gonna have long-term implications both for the industry, but also for developing renewable energy in Maine, which I think a lot of people are supportive of. So any insight on what's driving the timeline and whether you feel like you've given yourself enough time to do it right?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. So we are working on the timeline that you outlined from we're late spring to early, late winter to early spring to get an application in. A couple of thoughts on that. One is that I do think that it's important to note that we are very early on in this process, this long multi-year process. There are important decisions that we will be making, so don't want to underestimate that. But we will have many years to continue working on this prior to seeing anything in the water. And the other thing I'd say is that we are balancing seeing the growing interest for commercial large-scale development in the Gulf of Maine and wanting to take steps to do what we think is right for Maine and to be in the driver's seat of this. And while we don't control all the decisions, and there's federal government, there are other people involved in the decisions, we think that this research array is the right step. And if we're going to make it work, then to be most successful, getting an application in and starting that very long timeline will help us see this get built in the water prior to commercial scale projects, so that we can take the lessons that we learn in this research and inform future decisions about commercial projects that will have much more, you know, larger scale input and potential impacts that we want to know how to minimize. So I appreciate your perspective on the challenges of both our time here and also working with it with fishing industry and others. We absolutely do want to have these conversations. Meredith and I are available and want to meet small groups individually, be as flexible as we can, and hopefully you know, the indicators will get better and we can meet in person, because I think we do want to try to work with the industry to the extent and in the way that we'll work as best we can.
Thanks, Selena. I appreciate that. I guess I just say one other thing real quickly, if I might, and that is I appreciate everything you said. I think that the research that you're hoping to do in this array is really important, and that it will inform the development, if they happen, of other proposals, and getting that research done early is really important. And I would just say, from where I sit, part of that research is not just about the impacts of where the turbines are, whether you can fish around them or what the impacts in the water are, but it's also research on how to do a good public process and how to engage the public in it and how to, you know, get buy-in on what it is that you're doing so that when you make these sightings decisions in the future, people feel like they had their voice heard when we're making sighting decisions. So I think that's part of the research, and I just hope you'll keep that in mind as you guys move forward.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm going to go to the comment in the chat, and then I'll go to Patrice. So Richard Wall said, following on John Williamson's earlier comment, what are the cooperative research opportunities with the fishing industry to conduct baseline research ahead of evaluating the impacts of wind arrays on key marine species, habitats, and fisheries?
So
okay. I'm sorry. Expand on that a bit. I realize that I'm Rick Wally from University of Maine Lobster Institute. I just wanted to get a better sense, knowing that there are already environmental consultants involved in bidding on the environmental impacts. I wonder to what extent the fishing industry might be engaged in that process as platforms to do the research.
Okay. So just to be clear, there is no specific research happening to support this project now. So there's nothing in the water happening now. We will be, after the research array application is submitted and before as Elise is, at some point in the next year, we're going to be working to set up a research consortium that the state will lead. We'll certainly want to work with the industry on that consortium, work with other universities, higher institutions, other groups such as that regional groups that are working on research components to make sure that we are identifying key priorities for this project. And then both for the various stages of this project. Anything else, Meredith, on the specific baseline information?
Well, I just was going to say on the vessels, you know, on the cooperative research side, obviously the state has a long history of doing our survey work with the fishing industry collaboratively, and I'm sure that we'll be taking the same approach. We're certainly planning on doing that.
Great, thank you. Thanks a lot, Rick. I've got Patrice next, so Patrice, over to you. Thanks for waiting.
Sure. I think I have my microphone finally working tonight. So hi, everybody. I want to start by just thanking the state for holding these meetings. There's obviously a lot of pent up anxiety and a lot of pent up questions to finally have a process to start to roll that out. I conceptually, you know, really understand where you're going and why you're going in this direction. But when I think about what you're actually doing, I am really just overwhelmed with concern because, you know, Selena, you explained that this is a very long process and some decisions will be made quickly. But in reality, this is an extraordinarily aggressive time frame to make a huge decision. Where are we going to site a potentially 12 turbine wind farm that will be out there for 20 years? It's not going anywhere and it's going to be cabled. So, you know, doing outreach with the fishing industry is difficult during best times. Doing it during a pandemic it's really mind-bending. I mean, this is stuff that guys need to be in a room with a chart, you know, being able to show you what's important to them and really having time to digest. What are you talking about? What is this technology? How is it going to impact us? And there's just precious little time to even begin to get the wheels turning, never mind make a decision that we're going to live with. You know, part of that is, you know, we talked about identifying data gaps. Well, we don't need to identify them. We know we do not have any fine scale spatial data for the offshore lobster fishery. And we can be sure that this very, you know, long lasting decision will have to be made without it. It's impossible to do that. I'm very bothered and really, really grappling to understand the logic of doing a sighting and moving forward aggressively with this research project, before we've started a planning process. And, you know, one of the things that's been drifting through my mind is, well, you know, we can try to really motivate guys to come to the table and let's just try to get this in the best place possible and really minimize the impacts. Well, if the state is successful in doing that and a commercial developer comes along, then, you know, maybe the commercial development goes in a place that's really precious fishing grounds, because we just cited the tiny one in the place that, you know, to minimize the impacts. So it really keeps bringing me back to the fact that we're vulnerable to get this wrong, because we haven't done anything to get the right data in place to site this properly for a lot of the fisheries. And we have no long-term vision of how this fits into the broader potential for commercial wind development in the Gulf of Maine. And the other part of this is, you know, this might be able to happen quicker than a full-scale commercial development, but I can see no way that it precludes commercial developers coming in. So I don't know, it leads me to an uncomfortable place. MLA has a long history of collaboration. We're always at the table. We always take the high road. We try to do our best to make things work for the fishermen, but I'm feeling very uncomfortable about telling fishermen to help site this, because siting this so fast feels like a very, very dangerous and misguided step. And, you know, I guess I just want to urge you to really consider why. I've asked this question many, many times and have yet to get a satisfactory answer. And, you know, really ask that you maybe rethink the planning process and how potentially this research array could be at the beginning of the planning process and not just move through uncomfortably fast for some reason, honestly, that I think escapes the reach of anybody in the fishing industry right now. And I can't figure out a way to connect those dots. So I guess that's not a question at all. It's a commentary. It's a concern. But I feel like it's just really important to get that on the record.
Thank you, Patrice.
Yeah, thank you, Patrice.
Dan, you are up next, then Troy, and then I think Jerry has another comment, and there's also a comment or two in the chat. So, Dan, you're up.
Cool, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, sound great.
Cool, I just got two things here. One of them is that whatever you guys put on the table, I certainly hope you will be having some kind of exit or decommissioning type strategy. You know, you said this is a 20-year project. I think the industry would like to know what's going to be left in the water theoretically when you're done with this project. My other question kind of goes along with, you pointed out this is kind of a collaborative process between Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts. But you didn't really mention our federal fisheries officials out in the federal waters, you know, NOAA. What is the engagement going to be with NOAA, the National Marine Fisheries Service? I'm particularly interested to know, you know, how much of your area is overlapping with, you know, what's been designated as essential fish habitats for a multitude of species. You know, I'll just kind of leave it at that. You know, there's a couple of things, obviously, we're early in the process, but I think these are some things that also need to be answered, you know, before you go through your permitting application process. Thank you.
Great, thank
you. So, Daniel, on the decommissioning project, it'll be a 20-year or more project. I don't know this today how long this project will be there. It'll be 20 years or more, and as part of the leasing requirement for the federal lease, it will have decommissioning requirements to return the lease to the a similar environment to before the lease was issued. So we'll meet the requirements that are set by the federal government and on the decommissioning components of that. Regarding the regional approach, just want to clarify that this is a state research lease for this research array that the state is leading. We are talking to our other states to make sure that we're using their data separately. There's ongoing task force that is set up to look at longer at commercial leasing that includes both federal and state agencies. On your specific point about the data, we are talking to our federal agencies, including NOAA and others, to make sure that we have we're using the best data that is available, and we'll talk to them as we're going down the siting path there. So, I don't know about the essential fish piece, Meredith?
Yeah, I won't get into that right now, Dan, but you're raising a good point. I just wanted to add that we are definitely working with NOAA on this. We've reached out to them. I just want to, you know, emphasize we're still in very early stages of this process. So we've had preliminary discussions with GARFO and with the center, and having some discussions with, particularly with the Science Center, about research priorities and identifying opportunities to work together to answer questions that we all have about citing floating technology, as that's a completely new thing for us to all be considering. So definitely anticipate that this will be a conversation that we continue to have with other states. I know that some of our partners in other states are on the call tonight. Glad to see that, and happy to continue the conversation. We know this is not an area that is only fished by Maine fishermen. So I'm glad to see you here tonight. And just, we'll be continuing the dialogue, but this is just the first conversation.
Thank you, Meredith. Troy, you're up next, and then Kristen, then I'll note a comment in the comment chart as well.
Yeah, you hear me all right?
Yes, sir. Sound great.
I just got a few things here. Firstly, it sounds like you're already zeroed in on a site. I mean, at least in a very small area, and it sounds like this cable's me running down the sheepskit. And that's where I've grown up, and I fish now. I know a lot of people who do, and you're talking about the Boothbay Region community, Westport Island, Five Islands, Georgetown, and Wiscasset, all fishing that river. And say this cable does have an effect on our lobsters. We have no data. We're going to have no proof to sit here 10 years later. We haven't caught anything. You know, our landings have gone way down. We have no concrete data to prove that caused by the cable or what we had before. So there's no baseline data to really establish what effect the cable has, if it does have an effect. We had some meetings here at the Boothbay with Firehouse with Aquavetus and everything else a couple years ago, and they were already talking about sighting theirs off Monhegan. And I know there was a lot of big fit with the guys to the east of us. They didn't want the cable there, and it seemed like Boothbay became the target for the cable there a couple years ago, and it seems like we're right on site. And I'm not sure if the plans are on the cable to Maine Yankee to hook to the power grid. We have all that there, but it's a very economically prosperous river for a bunch of towns, and it doesn't seem like there's much of a clue about the effect that cable could have. And we're going to be powerless if it does have an effect to prove it even did have an effect in the first place. You know, we're not going to get compensated for lost landings if we can't say that where we caught the lobsters in the first place and that the loss was caused by the cable. So pretty concerned about all that. I know Aquavetus, when we met with them at the Boothbay Fire Station, told us they'd keep us informed of what went on. Then they went and met with our town, you know, selectmen without emailing us. We wrote down our email addresses on a piece of paper, never got anything from them. No updates, you know, no mentions of their meeting. It's moving very fast. Like Patrice said, it sounds like you're already zeroed down on a site, you know, that sandy stuff, you know, off Seguin out there running that cable right through the sheepskit to Maine Yankee. And I don't know if anything we say here is going to change anything or at all, but I don't know. And the other thing, people will laugh at me, but we're required to put a 600-pound breakaway on our buoys for right whale safety. And we're talking about massive cables anchoring a whole wind farm, you know, out there. I don't understand how that risk to right whales doesn't come into the scenario at all when we're constantly asked to give up things and you know, trawl our traps up, you know, risk our little boats of more gear aboard, all for this right whale safety. And when we're talking about power cables and chains to anchor these things out there, and that hasn't come into play much. But mainly I'm just concerned there's no data on the Sheepskit rivers, you know, what it's done in the past, who's caught what where. So if this cable does have an effect, you know, it's a heck of a guinea pig, you know, that river. It's a lot of communities that fish that year round, and I don't know. Guess that's all I got.
Thank you. And I wonder if the state can speak again to the concern about decisions already being made, the risk of EMF, but potentially the river pickle comes on shore, whether that river or somewhere else. So maybe you guys can speak to that.
Yeah, thanks, Troy. So I hear you on your concerns and your thoughts about the site being selected. We have an area that we've been thinking about that I mentioned in terms of between Cape Small and the Sheepscot, but that really we have not identified a specific spot. And the other point that I want to make is that we have not decided on an interconnection point. There are a couple of interconnection, high voltage internet connection points that could work for a project in this area.
Is Mate and Yankee one of those? I know, you know, driving by it all the time, you know, those massive power cables make sense. So when you say Sheepskate, that's immediately where our minds go, is running that cable into those massive power lines.
It is one of them, but it is not the only one. And so we will want to have a conversation about both the siting of the location, and then as we go forward, we want to work with the industry on the cabling component of, as well. And we'll need to figure out where to bring this onshore. It's a critical question, so I completely understand that, but it's certainly not decided that it's going to Mate and Yankee. I just want to make that clear.
And I'd like to just mention, you know, if that does become the plan and you're running a high voltage cable into Wiscasset, there's a lot of guys who fish Wiscasset and just Wiscasset, and that whole little fishing community could be screwed if this does have a negative effect on the lobsters. And it doesn't sound like there's been much study into what effect it could have. So.
And you did bring up the point about the right whale, and through the NEPA analysis, we'll take a look at to make sure that we meet the requirements related to the right whale, and then also the additional research of the under the array that we would want to look at the right whale in addition to other issues.
I understand you guys aren't federal fisheries people, well, not the same people making us do these whale things, but it doesn't really pass much of a logical test that I can set a trawl right there and I have to have a breakaway, and I can only, you know, we're gonna have to have weak points in our rope if I set a trawl next to this windmill farm and there's chains and cables hanging down to the water column. So I don't know how much study that takes. That doesn't make much sense to me. Doesn't add up.
Well, I don't know if this is helpful. I do know there are NOAA protected species folks actually on the call tonight listening. So for what that's worth, I think the concern is definitely noted. Troy, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. I'm going to go to Jerry next and then to Kristen. So Jerry, you're up next, then Kristen.
I one thing, if you do meet the whale requirements, 800 breakaway on these windmills, they're not going to be there for very long. But my next comment would be, this is a 20-year research, but what's preventing, say, a company like Diamond from coming in and trying to permit in 2022 for a 50 wind turbine farm or whatever it may be? Do they have to wait until 20 years until this research is done? Or they just submit, they don't need to wait for this research, and then this research just becomes another farm just like they are?
So on the, obviously there are decisions that are out of our control when it comes to federal decision-making on offshore wind leasing. We believe that the next right step is this research array. There are BOEM processes and regulations that come into play. So if a Diamond Energy comes in and submits an application to BOEM for a 200 turbine project off the coast, the BOEM process would be to see if there is competitive interest in that area. And if there is competitive interest, would go through the task force process, which would be working with stakeholders to identify large areas for commercial leasing and then going through a competitive auction. So I don't think that, I don't want to say that the research array is stopping, can stop commercial development. That's not the specific intent of it, but I do think that getting this research array built and getting information from it prior to seeing construction and operations and of commercial scale projects will benefit the state and make sure that those help inform those commercial projects to be better suited to minimize impact. So we're doing what we can control, which is the state will strongly advocate for this research array, would advocate against commercial, unsolicited commercial leases that would, if they were, they were to come in for federal waters, and we'll work with BOEM to express and advocate for our view that we want to make sure that commercial projects can be informed by the work that we're doing here.
I just want to say, see, well, I see it in a little bit of different light I see we build this project, and then I see more companies like, I don't want to point Diamond out, but just using them for an example, being more eager to start one as well. So that's just how I see it, but maybe I'm wrong.
No,
and I had a guarantee that this project could last for 20 years and nobody could do anything in the Gulf of Maine until we had all the research done. But I know that's just not realistic. So.
That's not realistic. And also, I mean, to be totally frank, the state does see a path for offshore wind serving part of our energy needs, not going to meet all of our energy needs or other sources of energy too, but for our long-term energy plans, it is part of what our plan is. And so we just want to make sure that we get the information we need before we see those large scale projects in the water.
Let me do this.
But I just want to say one quick thing. Yeah. Your vision is not the same as fishermen. And I'm sorry, I'm saying that, I'm trying to say that as politely as I possibly can.
I completely understand
Jerry said totally politely. I appreciate the concern, kind of the civil behavior for all. Let me do this. I've got a question from Kristen when I want to get in. He's been waiting. Thank you. I've got a few comments in the chat. Then if we have time, I'll go to Troy, and then we probably need to wrap up because of time. But Kristen, I want to hand it over to you.
Yeah, thanks. As usual, Jerry stole my question out from under me. I'll just ask a follow-up kind of to what Jerry was talking about. Are there other developers that are interested and have approached the state of Maine in developing other projects here? Because what's stopping somebody from working simultaneously? I know you guys are racing to get the application in, but can't somebody get an application in at the same time or before you and just be doing the same things without all the outreach that you're doing?
Yeah. So I hear from offshore wind industry members interested in pursuing offshore wind projects off the coast of Maine, but they're working through this. So it's this regional task force that is made up of federal agencies and state agencies, including New Hampshire and Massachusetts, where they go through a process of where should we site areas, and then lease them. And then they go through a commercial auction to competitively lease them. And so that's what they've done in other areas of the country. There's a task force that exists in Maine. They've had one meeting and haven't done a lot of work toward moving along the process. And so what I would say is that, again, we can't control what the federal government will do. But I do know that if a developer put forward a project, there was likely to be other people interested. And when more than one developer for these large scale commercial projects are interested, it gets pushed into this long multi-year process, this 7-year process of competitively auction off the areas for leasing. And so I know those are probably more details than is helpful, but we think that we're trying to get this out front. We don't control all the decisions there, but this is what we think is the right approach.
So I guess that answers part of my question is if, and the questions that were asked before, if what you said is just true, that it could be a bid process, it could be 5 to 7 years, why can't we wait 3 to 4 more months so we can meet in person and do this right?
I certainly understand the concern with the timeline. We are, doing, taking this approach because we think that it's the right approach, and we are early in the process. We'll continue to be available to meet with you and to talk about this project to as much as people want to over the next couple of months in whatever capacity that you want to talk to us. We are available.
Let me just do this. I want to note from Chris, there's just, again, some of the concerns I think restated in writing about, the timing and about the impacts to the site, and the site's a precious ground for many people for many reasons. There's a question from Genevieve about what information is included in the application to BOEM. So that's probably a longer conversation than we have now, but maybe you can just give the elements that BOEM requires in a research application, Selena.
Sure. So we'll include the site, we'll include some scientific data in terms of what we know about the area that we're leasing. Will include some information about the conversations and stakeholder conversations that we're having. We'll include a framework, which is just a broad overview of the themes of the research. It's not a commitment to only focus on those areas, but an outline of what we hope to accomplish with this research array. And then there are some technical components, but it will I'm happy to go into more detail with you, Genevieve, if you would like. But we will not be making decisions about specific location, like micro siting decisions of the leases of the turbines in the application phase.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, but thank you very much. And again, more to come on that for sure. Peter Fallon had a question about when will all the potential sites for locations of where the table would connect to the grid be available, so people can have that information. And also Peter asked about where more information on the site on this issue can be found. And we'll come to that at the end with a slide to show that as well. But on terms of the actual cabling, the siting of potential interconnects, when will that be available for people to look at the choices?
Yeah, so the two high voltage nearshore sites that we know about is Main Yankee and Wyman Station. So those are the two sites that we are have the high voltage that's required for this type of offshore wind project. And then I guess we'll go through the specifics on the information in the closing, but we'll be putting some more information on our website in the next week or so.
Okay, great. And again, we're getting questions as we approach the end, so we'll try to squeeze them in very quickly. We might go just slightly over. So I'll go to the last question in chat, then I'm going to go to Troy, and Troy and David can be concise. We'll try to wrap up. So Tom asked a question about kind of scale of commercial versus research sites, particularly around EMF concerns, existing research on cable placement. And I don't know, Selena, if you can speak to that briefly, maybe the difference between a research project versus a commercial scale project.
So the components that make this different from a large scale project are the number of turbines. So we're looking at 12 or fewer. When you look at the areas that have been commercially leased south of here, they are often 10 times the size of this project. So it's this number. We still understand that it does have an impact, does take up space of 16 square miles or less. And what was the last question, Pat?
Let me just go back. I lost it there for a second. And I think it's also concerns about EMF and research going on that, and whether the size of, say, the transmission cable from a smaller research array versus a large commercial development could matter in terms of impact from EMF because of the size of the cable, essentially.
Yeah. Chris, what is the cable size on this one?
So probably 66 kV. So that's relatively low compared to the big projects further south. So to Troy's question earlier, there would be much less EMF impact.
Great.
Thank you. I don't know if you can hear me.
Tom.
Hey, Tom.
My question really was around in terms of the electromagnetic disturbance that when you get a farm 10 times the size of this, I would assume that the amount of megawatts going through those cables is going to be substantially more. Is this research project going to give you good data as to what effect bearing a cable this size versus a full-blown transmission is going to be? And my second part of that question was, what about vibration transmission through the water column from the floating arrays? Anybody looked at that in terms of fish migrations? Is there any data that's been looked at either in Europe or other places on that?
So on the first question, I think we'd certainly hope that this project would give us more information about the EMF impacts. I don't know the answer to the second question about vibration, Meredith or Chris.
I don't know either. I'm sorry. We can certainly try to see what we might be able to find and get back to you.
It falls into the category of the research that needs to be done because there really aren't many floating offshore wind turbines around the world. Ones and twos.
Thanks, Chris. There's additional comments in chat, which we will absolutely save. I'm gonna get our last two commenters in, Troy and then David, turn it back to Selena to wrap up. So Troy, over to you and then to David.
Yeah, I guess I got two quick points about what I was talking about earlier. It sounds like the Sheeps gets the site. I wasn't familiar with that second power location you mentioned, but I think that's the same area pretty much, which you'd still be in the Sheepskit. I think as early as possible, if that is going to be the case, I'd like to see the people who fish the Sheeps get a chance to get, you know, the fact that they fish there down on paper, on the record. That way, if we're sitting here years from now, you know, arguing over what effect this had, you know, we at least have it on record who was fishing there before this all happened. And I guess the only other thing, we went to all these aqua Vetus meetings in Booth Bay, had these conversations. We didn't like that, but that was a smaller scale to answer all these questions that have no answers. And I don't understand why we're going a little bigger than that project, even when that project didn't happen.
Selena, can you clarify to Troy's question about, is the other site in the Sheepskin or is it much further south?
South of there. It is not in the Sheepskin.
Okay. I just want to be clear. And again, point noted about scale of project. David, thanks for waiting. Over to you.
Thank you. So just a quick question for me. My name is Dave Sullivan. I'm with the Maine Lobster Union. I know we've had some small scale meetings on this. We've talked individually about some of this stuff. And now we're starting into these bigger group meetings. And this is such a just a tiny section of fishermen and people from the industry that are on these calls. So you're not even getting, you know, some of the more vocal people and some of the, you know, the big offshore guys are going to be affected by this as well. But I still feel like if we're only, this is the second meeting that we've had on this with this type of a group, and you're hearing all these different things, all these concerns, we're talking about entire communities being folded up just by going down into one river, you know. So the concerns that we have are out there, and it doesn't feel like, it feels like the box is so small for us to have any maneuvering room here to say, this isn't going to work for us. You know, you're talking about a 20-year lease. If this does work, that means that lease is probably, it's going to continue on after, and it'll probably add more windmills to that array station. So it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, I think. So I don't want to sugarcoat it and say, well, this is a 20-year experiment, because if it does work, it's going to continue on. And if it does work and it continues on, then there will be no shareholders out there for you guys to talk to see what the effects are. Because when you start shutting down three or four communities at a time, it's going to be very difficult for us to support or be on board when there's zero information out there on what the effects are going to be on our fishing industries, what it's going to be in our communities. And a lot of our communities, lobster fishing provides 70-80% of the income into that community and all the small businesses that surround that. So, I mean, it could literally wipe out entire communities. And if you talk about decommissioning in 20 years, and we obviously know that there'll probably be no decommission process, that this will work. We know all kinds of people are coming. I mean, they're popping up everywhere. They're calling all the different, you know, groups asking for support and looking at, you know, some of the data that we have on lobstering and stuff like that. So it's just going to keep multiplying and multiplying, and I don't think it's going to go away. So site location is so critical in this. This is the first one, and it's going to be the big experiment. Where this goes will determine everything for the future of Maine, I think. And I think the rush on the timeline is going to be, it's going to hurt us. And if it's not done properly, we're in big trouble. This industry, you know, we're going to lose this industry for another industry, which isn't going to be good. I mean, people don't come to Maine to see windmills. They come to Maine for Maine lobsters. So it's really hard and tough for fishermen to swallow the pill that, oh, we're just going to try this. Don't worry about it. It's just this tiny little 16 square miles, but it's going to multiply and it's going to get worse. But depending on where that 16, where that little postage stamp is and where the cable comes across, will it stop the migration of entire species that crawl on the bottom of the ocean? If you can't tell us yes, it will, or confidently say no, it won't. We're struggling now with the migration patterns of lobster in the state of Maine now with the warming of the Gulf. So, I mean, these are answers that if we don't have, how do you expect industry to get on board with this or say, yeah, let's try it. Maybe it's a good idea. I mean, every question we ask is we don't know, we don't know, we don't know. It's going to be very hard if we don't have the data to look at and sit down and talk about as a group. You know, is this good for Maine or not? Because I can guarantee you people are not going to come here to see windmills. So it's a really tough struggle without the information, you know, and a very tough pill to swallow. If we're already in a tiny little spot where we think these are going to go, if there's no wiggle room, what are we going to do next?
Thanks, David. Let me just note briefly, I think some of the issues people raised tonight, turn it back to Selena to close. I think people raised a number of issues around siting, both the cable and the site itself. Any number of impacts, I won't list them all here. There were many noted and questions about them. There was a lot of comment, I think, about the process, both timing and sequencing vis-a-vis kind of either the state's roadmap or the kind of the three-state planning process. There was, I think, some desire to understand better the details, the technology, how they're laid out, the cabling, et cetera. There's, I think, thoughts and questions about baseline data gathering, really important from the river itself to the site, et cetera. heard a number of questions about kind of how other actors or projects might or might not flow or be connected to or stop or increase, whatever it might be. And then I just think kind of the timeline of the actual, the length of the project, the scale of the project, the multiplication effect of the project, et cetera, kind of what it means more broadly than the project itself. So with that, we really appreciate people being on. I want to turn back to Selena and Meredith to talk about next steps.
I don't know if you're going to put that slide up, Laura, with our contact information. But Meredith and I are happy to talk to you at any point, standing offer to have one-on-one meetings or small group meetings. Next week, we'll put on information on our website that will be assist in helping you understand a little bit more about what we're talking about, including GIS tools and feedback form and citing criteria and research categories that Meredith mentioned earlier. We're planning on this scoping meeting in January, and happy to talk to you at any point before then too. We really appreciate the time. We hear, I think, loud and clear the questions, concerns that people brought up today, and want to make sure that we address those to the extent that we can and consider them going forward. But again, I appreciate all of your time, and I hope you all have a good night.
Right. I would just echo that. Thank you all for attending and for your input. We really appreciate you coming tonight.
Thank you all. There are, as you noted, there are two more webinars, one tomorrow night, one next Tuesday, same time, 6 to 7:30, same presentation, and then questions at, you know, whatever they may be from those who are participating. Thank you, presenters. Thank you, folks who attended, questions, comments. Appreciate people's engagement and civility. And we will close for tonight. Be safe, be well. Thank you all. And we'll all be in touch.
Good night. Thanks for having us.